This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
We have a ton of great guests today, as we normally do. The crew back in Bristol always does a great job loading us up with great storylines in terms of guests and all that stuff. And then we kind of get in front of the parade and off we go. But before we get to all the guests, which we'll give you a little teaser on that, we will take your phone calls at 844-SAY-ACCN. Of course, you got us on SiriusXM 371, and you'll hopefully have us on ACC Network as well. Last night there was one game. And Florida State was looking for a little revenge because they played Pitt in game one, and the Panthers took care of business at the Zoo, and Florida State pulled away. Their bench was out of sight again. And that's what Florida State does, man. They just hit you with waves of players.
Well, and last night it was that guy right there from Charlotte, by the way, Patrick Williams, who just had a great night, 16 points, 5 rebounds, 7 of 12 off the bench. And, again, I think that he's providing just, you know, a great spark for Leonard Hamilton's team.
53 bench points last night for the Noles.
That's going to beat a lot of people.
53. Virginia's looking around going, man, 53 points? No, the bench gave you 53 last night for Florida State. That is now 21 straight home wins for Florida State, arguably the best home court advantage in the league, the way they play.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they were rocking, man. They were just getting it done.
Was that like 1,000 of 1,004 at home?
It's crazy how good they've been. 21 is the magic number, though. That's how many straight wins at home for the Noles. It's also the same number of losses on the road against ranked teams for Pitt. 21 straight. Haven't won one of those since 13.
By the way, Florida State now tied for second with Louisville, a game behind Duke in the loss column, as everybody knows the way the standing's set up. Pittsburgh, by the way, now just a game ahead in the win column of Miami. The reason I bring all that up is Pittsburgh.
Show everybody your colorful chart. You love the colors, man.
It's easy for me to identify.
It's a colorful chart, by the way.
Turn that down just a little bit, Angela. Does that look? Got a lot of intel on there. Helps me get through the show.
No
try
pencils.
And speak coherently.
We're talking about every school color right there.
And there's the bottom three on the back. Sometimes it's on one card. Sometimes it's on another. The thing I like about the dangerous part for this, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, Pittsburgh, Miami, Wake, and Carolina are the three that are right now within range of Tuesday. Okay,
you're talking about the first day of the ACC.
Yes, tournament. Those three games, the 16,
10 through 15.
That's correct. Here's the curious part about this. Remember how you always like to say if you win two, you can move up. If you lose two, you can really move down.
Two in a week.
Yeah, two in a week.
Right.
Well, NC State, Syracuse, Notre Dame, Clemson, and Boston College are within one game of Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech.
Glob. I mean,
yeah. Like the Wolfpack, who tonight have Duke and Saturday have Florida State, lose those two and say – Georgia Tech wins at Wake Forest and wins at Syracuse. Guess what happens?
Flip-flop.
NC State's playing Tuesday. I mean, it's crazy.
But we've been talking about that for the last 6 weeks,
I know.
Quite frankly.
But the interesting part is we're getting down to the end here, last 2 weeks and a half.
Everything's magnified.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Right.
I mean, you would expect some degree of separation, and we've got two games between fourth and fifth. That's the biggest margin we've got across the board.
Well, the glob is alive and well. I mean, we know who the top three are. We think Virginia's four. And then, again, good luck 5 through 12.
Right.
And right now, North Carolina's the worst team in the league. And you got, you know, Wake sitting there in a position tonight, which they're going to have a great celebration. We had Dave Odom on the show yesterday. There should be an emotional crowd, I would assume, in Winston-Salem tonight for Dave Odom's name going up with a banner and the celebration of the 95 team. And the Georgia Tech team is kind of feeling better about itself.
Right.
And really, to be honest with you, I think Wake Forest probably looks at that game and says, you know what, we should win this game, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think Florida State played well last night?
I thought Florida State is just doing their thing, man. You know, when you talk about, you know, Vassell and Walker go 2 of 12 from the field, those two guys have to play better. But the point of it is that Florida State has such great depth, right? And, again, that's the difference of the best three teams in the league versus everybody else in the conference.
Yeah.
Whether it be Florida State, Duke, or Louisville – They can go deeper than anybody else with quality players. And what Florida State does, it doesn't matter what uni they wear at home, man, they're going to bring dudes coming off the bench. It happened again last night. You mentioned how Williams goes off, but 53 bench points. It just doesn't matter. It doesn't seem like it when one of their stars, like Vassell, has an off night or Walker doesn't shoot the ball well.
Yeah.
Hey, next guy up, let's go. And they just find guys who make baskets. That's why they're so good.
By the way, for folks who've never seen the N7 jersey that Florida State wears occasionally during the year, it's
I like those.
Celebration and salute of the Seminole tribe. It's mm-hmm. the colors of the tribe, and it's endorsed by the tribe. They, in fact, that's the one thing Florida State does, and certainly in a time and place in our country where we have sensitivity to Native Americans the way we do, it's important to note that the relationship between the Seminole tribe and Florida State is excellent.
I kind of like those.
I do too. I like them a lot. They only wear them, I think, two or three times a year.
And that's why I like it. Because, I think of Florida State, when we go uniforms, old guys talking about uniforms because they're not designed for us.
Yeah.
But I like it when they give you a little every now and then.
Sure.
And that's exactly how they play it off. I think it looks great.
By the way, Duke, looking at you tonight. About time for those Navy Gothics to make an appearance.
There are two really incredibly important games tonight in the ACC,
Duke,
in my opinion.
Looking at those Gothics tonight.
Duke NC State is a critical game for the Wolfpack. Critical. And for Duke, hey, they want to win the regular season for the first time basically in a decade. This is one you got to have, right?
And, agreed.
You know, Kevin Keats has only played Duke twice.
Yep.
It's unfortunate. I mean, you got two schools sitting right down the road from each other, and this is going to be the third time Kevin Keats has seen Coach K.
Yep.
But a critic, I cannot emphasize how big a game this is for NC State this week, quite frankly. Duke tonight at home, Florida State this weekend at home. Matter of fact, it's the first time they've had back-to-back top 10 matchups at home since 05. So it's a big deal for the red and white tonight. And again, for Duke to keep that first place spot, they'll have their hands full. This will be an emotional, juiced up, ready to rock and roll crowd tonight, and that's a big deal. And I think Syracuse at Louisville is a really important game tonight, too. Obviously, it's a must win for Syracuse. Must win. After you lost at Florida State with a chance, you've got to steal one against mm-hmm. a team with a number besides name. In Louisville, after their lousy week, they need to show me something tonight a little bit. Don't you think? I mean, you can't have another stinker.
Right.
I mean, they were flat at Georgia Tech, blown out at Clemson. They're back home. The crowd will be great. But Louisville needs to kind of give me something that, hey, you know what? Yeah, we got this thing fixed. Don't worry about us.
Mm-hmm.
And for Syracuse, like I said, got to win the game. Buddy Boeheim can't give you a shutout tonight. He's got to shoot lights out.
I'm a little intrigued tonight because of where Louisville is, and in particular, Jordan Wara. I want to see how Jordan Wara plays tonight. Because I think Louisville needs to get back into some semblance of confidence, stride, whatever you want to call it,
right.
Pack.
Exactly.
And Warren needs to be part of that. They don't need to start down that narrow road they went down last year, late in the year. You mentioned it the other day that, you know, they lost that lead to Duke, lost the game at the Yum Center, and never seemed like the same team.
Never the same team.
Yep.
But this is a more experienced team.
I agree.
This is a better team than they were a year ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just looked up just out of curiosity's sake. You know, we keep talking about when teams struggle, normally they're just not making shots.
Right.
Louisville, in their last two games, Wes, 9 of 51 from beyond the arc. 9 of 51. When you come rolling in there shooting 17%, you are asking for trouble.
Right.
Just telling you. So I expect Louisville to bounce back. I expect Syracuse to play desperate. That could be a very highly entertaining game tonight.
Yeah.
I'm expecting it to be.
Yeah. So we move really into the last quarter of the regular season in terms of conference play this week with the ball games. Most teams, some have six left, but most have Virginia, for instance, has a half dozen left. Most schools, though, only have five conference games left to go. So we'll see.
We got 3 weeks, man.
Kind of how this plays out. Going to be interesting to see. Especially, we mentioned the gap between Virginia and NC State. The gap between Florida State and Virginia for the time being is also 2.5 after the
results. You know what? I don't think of it that way because I don't think – I know Virginia beat Florida State. Got it.
Yep.
But I think that the three teams above Virginia are better than Virginia. 8 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
And I think Duke and Louisville and Florida State are a cut above any other combination you want to put. I think Virginia is the fourth best team, and then I have no earthly idea, 5 through 12. No clue. None.
But every Monday, we produce accounting.
We do because, you know, it's kind of like the flavor of the week. I mean, you know, this week Clemson was the flavor of the week.
They were, yeah.
You know, a couple weeks ago Pitt was the flavor of the week. All of a sudden they lose three in a row. Now, man, whatever, to put them down 11 or 12. I mean, Virginia Tech goes 3 weeks without winning a game. And they just kind of – they went from the 5, 6, 7 mark to 12 or 13. I mean, it's, that's just the way it is. And on a given night, the 13th team in the league can beat the 5th team in the league, and you don't even get upset with it. It's like, okay, whatever. Yeah. It's what it is. But the top three are better than everybody else, and I think Virginia is better than the rest of the glob.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Boys been up this morning?
Now, they've been up early. We were up very early this morning, 3 a.m.
Oh, my gosh.
Matter of fact, Mrs. P, I never saw my wife last night. She must be in one of the suites upstairs, so she didn't even come in and bother me. I hope Mrs. P's okay. If she's upstairs drinking coffee, miss you, honey. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number.
Oh, what are we doing?
What are we doing? I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to give you a little dose of the cheese, man. The big man himself, John Swofford, the commissioner of the ACC, who spent some quality time with us yesterday. And there, this is a very interesting time in college athletics. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even talking about college football playoff expansion. I'm not even talking about expansion of leagues, which is normally dominated. Right. The conversation this last decade. But, you know, the NCAA made some announcements yesterday regarding this transfer situation, the one-time only.
Yeah, how about right behind the ACC? Here comes that NCAA working group.
The working group. Yeah. But, I mean, this is a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
And I think name, image, and likeness, which we'll address later on this hour, is the other huge issue. And if you watched our interview with Commissioner Swofford yesterday, when a guy with that kind of experience tells you this may be one of the most difficult, complex situations they've encountered, that should be a flag to all of us to pay attention.
Yeah. We started, though, yesterday in our visit with the commissioner in the 9 o'clock hour. We started on the transfer topic, and we began it by saying, okay, here's the ACC. What kind of influence did the Big Ten provide to not only your decision but also your discussion?
Well, I don't think that necessarily had an impact on our discussion, but it was a discussion that we've had before, and as in most issues of this nature, there's a certain evolution to those discussions, and our athletic directors and faculty representatives and SWAs reached a unanimous decision to support a one-time transfer opportunity for all student athletes, regardless of the sport, going forward, and to try and push that basic philosophy forward and hopefully in a very progressive way. Obviously, it's a complicated issue, but we felt generally that this was simply the right side of that issue to be on going forward. So I was glad to see our schools do that.
Commissioner, how much of this was dictated, I guess, because of things already in place, the transfer portal, the inconsistency of the NCAA waiver? I mean, does this make the one-time transfer a more logical step going forward as opposed to, you know, kind of taking, for lack of a better term, all the subjectivity out of it?
Wes, I think it does. It makes it, I think it's logical, as you said. I think it makes it consistent. I think it gives all of our student athletes coming in to a university and to a program a sense of what they can do going forward in terms of freedom of movement if they make that choice to do so. So again, and this has evolved, and the whole transfer portal and what goes into the NCAA determining those who can or cannot transfer and be immediately eligible. And you mentioned some inconsistencies there. A lot of times the NCAA has to make decisions that it cannot publicly come out and share all of the information in regard to an individual student athlete situation and why that decision was made. So there may be some inconsistencies. There may appear to be inconsistencies when maybe they're not. But this would eliminate all of that, and the information we were given from one of the NCAA committees was that about 39% of students at our universities nationally transfer at some point in time. Student athletes can't be exactly like all other students. We realize that, but as much as that can be the case, the better, in my opinion. So I was very very glad, as I said, that our schools took the stance that they took. It'll have some consternation. It'll have some heartburn going forward in terms of the details of it, and it certainly will continue to make one of the real important aspects of coaching in today's world is management of who's on your team, so to speak. And it could have an impact there to a degree. And I think the fact that the graduate transfer rule has worked pretty well, actually. I think that came into play as well.
All right, I want to ask a little heartburn then. In this respect, the last couple of years, the student athlete has gained more power, if you will, in the process. Can we go back on this? Or are we just out now and going to move forward with student athletes seemingly in some scenarios having more leverage than they've ever had in the history of intercollegiate athletics? Are we all okay with that? Or are we still in the learning process and we're giving them yet another step of it here?
Well, I think this would be, if it were to pass, another step in that process. I would call it freedom of movement, freedom of choice, a little more than anything else, as other students have. And I think I would also call it consistency in terms of, currently, there's football, men's and women's basketball, baseball, and ice hockey, where you can't just transfer and be eligible. So this, this just clears the picture and clears the deck some, I think. Mm-hmm. But, I do understand those who will have concerns if it passes. I do understand that it makes it very challenging for coaches to manage their roster, so to speak. But on the other hand, it does clear the air, and coaches and student athletes know what they can and cannot do, and it takes some of the subjectivity off of committees making decisions that are obviously critically important to the young men and women that are wanting to make a change, and certainly the coaches too. Even though it'll be more challenging, I think it does give a clearer picture of how the world can operate. And you never know all of the unintended consequences. If this passes, we'll continue to learn and see how it progresses. But as I said earlier, I think it's the right side of the equation for us to be on.
All right, that's just a portion of the interview yesterday with Commissioner John Swofford.
Right.
And if folks want to chime in on this, they can. 844-SAY-ACCN. Again, that's 844-SAY-ACCN.
Now, as you can imagine, the transfer situation and the proposals are going to create some angst. Principally, the most affected group in this, in my opinion, and I think those others, is going to be the coaches. Roster management will become a premium. And I hate to use that term because that's a pro term, but it's a true term when it relates to this, because you're talking about the ability of players to have the one-time scot-free move. Okay? So, opinion on some of this was fast and furious yesterday. One came from our Mark Richt, of course, who's got nearly 20 years head coaching experience in the ACC. And Coach Richt said, I've got an idea. You recruit and develop players, and when I think they're good enough, I'll poach them from your roster. Welcome to what the new normal will look like in college football. That's certainly one side of it. And I think don't you think the pressure gets turned up a little bit on coaches in scenarios like this, Pac?
Well, it's your team. I mean, that's your responsibility.
Well,
if you're a coach, that is your deal.
Right.
So, I mean, again, I'm not a coach, so it's easy to sit here and tell somebody else how they're supposed to do their business, right? I mean, mm-hmm. We're in a really easy position in these new chairs.
Relatively speaking, yes.
But quite frankly, that's what coaches are supposed to do.
Right. That take Mark Rick's idea that we're showing you there, and now here's Jay Billis's opinion of this.
Now, I agree with Billis.
Now, I do agree with Jay on this. When Jay says, here's an idea, make and enforce rules on yourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest with you. If I had to pick between these two, the Jay Billis approach to me makes a lot more sense in terms of, hey, you know, guys, don't get upset with it. Just go about your business and do what you're supposed to do.
And Jay says, here's an idea for coaches. Make and enforce a rule on yourselves. Don't recruit players off another team. Pretty simple. Don't limit players due to your, parentheses, perceived inability to act ethically. You can solve your own problem.
I agree with that 100%.
I couldn't agree more with Jay on that.
Yeah, I'm with him.
And look, it's not an if, it's a win on this.
That's right.
Okay, this is not an if, it's a win. And it's going to change the game. But what's really going to change the game is what we're going to talk about next. Because of all the things we talked about yesterday regarding the transfer, down the road, to me, lies the real game changer, because very few times in intercollegiate athletic history has the government and the NCAA and the schools all been in the same room on something. One was the formation of the organization, and that was Teddy Roosevelt, right?
And some people would argue less is more.
I would understand that. But when it comes to name, image, and likeness, the government is going to get involved.
Apparently.
And last week they asked questions of the president of the NCAA, Dr. Mark Emmert. And quite frankly, they weren't impressed with the answers.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
We still have a ton to cover. Mention Bobby Seymour coming up from Wake Forest, top of the hour. Mike Young, head basketball coach at Virginia Tech. They've got Miami tonight. He'll join us in about an hour. But right now, my unverified brother, Luke Hancock, live from Louisville. There he is.
Can we roll some
That's the best intro.
Can we roll some of that video back we went to bump with here a moment ago? There was something like, was that a homecoming king deal? What was going on there, Hancock?
Roll all the basketball, not the homecoming kids.
No, what is this right here? What is this?
Man. Huh? 100 years ago. We had a little string there. I think Kyle Keurig won it, and then Elijah Justice won it, and then so I finished this off for the three-peat there.
Homecoming no misses, King. By the way, in the highlight video. Did you see that? All court.
Yeah, well done. Well done.
All right.
There were a lot of those.
All right. We're going to cover the All-ACC and nothing but net field trip here in just a moment, but tonight at the Yum Center, 7 o'clock, ESPN, Louisville, Syracuse, Orange come to visit. Pack and I talked about this being one of the two headline games in the league. Now, here's my question. Bigger for the Cards or bigger for the Orange tonight?
Ooh, good question. I'm going to go bigger for the Cards because I think Syracuse, although they've made me a believer in some weeks, they haven't quite done enough yet. To make me think they're going to get in the tournament. I'm not sure what the percentages are there, but Louisville, I mean, a week ago or maybe 10 days ago before this two-game slide, people were talking about them as one of the best teams in the country and a real favorite to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. And these last two games, Mr. Jordan Wara has not acted like the ACC Player of the Year. They have a lot of work to do getting back on track. They just haven't looked the same in these last two games. You know, it's not like they lost to Duke and Florida State. They need to get back on track. This is a really, really important game against Syracuse. And Syracuse is a team that has run with the top teams in this conference and just needs an extra bounce or a little bit of luck to get some of those wins. They've been a really dangerous team. That zone can really stifle you, especially if you're not shooting the basketball well, which Louisville has not done the last two games.
Yeah, Louisville 9-51 from beyond the arc the last two games. Very out of character. Look, you know, you've been part of basketball teams. You go through highs and lows during the season. I think everybody gets to the middle of February, and it's kind of a grind. We talk about the mental aspect of this, but if you had to guess, what would you guess the problem is with Louisville? Is it just that time of the year that everybody kind of gets tired of one another? I mean, you tell me. You've been through this before.
Yeah, I think it's the grind of the season. You know, you're in two-a-days at this point. You're trying to focus on the next game. It just kind of wears you down. I think every team goes through this. The year we won a national championship, we were number one in the country for, it feels like a couple hours, but it might have been a week. And we lost our next three games. And we needed a 5-overtime loss to Notre Dame to really turn the corner and kind of focus in as a team. I think this will be one of those moments where these guys, they hear the noise when you get on social media and they know they're not playing very well. They've been kind of beat down these last 2 weeks. You can imagine how film session and practice has been. And they got a chance to rally and beat a pretty good team in Syracuse. I think they're probably the fifth or sixth best team in this league. And they need to go out and play well. Syracuse is not going to go down very easily. They're a team that when they're hot, they can absolutely beat anybody in this conference. I think Louisville needs to focus on driving the basketball and getting it inside, even though they were shooting at that incredible clip. One of the best teams in the country actually shooting the ball. But you got to imagine after two straight games losing to teams you shouldn't, that they're going to have a different game plan. I think Louisville is too good of a basketball team to be reliant so heavily on shooting threes. You know, if they're too good to lose to those two teams this week and not really put up a good fight, honestly. They need to focus more on getting the basketball to the rim, creating free throws. And when you get paint touches, it opens everything up. Syracuse is one of those teams that on the other end plays with a ton of freedom on offense. When they get hot and when they're playing with confidence, man, they can fill it up. They can score a lot of points. And we all know the Coach Boeheim zone. If you're not playing well and you're not attacking, you're not aggressive in that zone, getting those paint touches, it's going to be a long night.
All right, I want to go inside the mind of the shooter here for a minute. We can talk about Buddy Boeheim. We can talk about Jordan Wara. Both have had dynamic experiences, not so good, but dynamic, poor experiences shooting the ball. Wara for a couple of games, Boeheim certainly Saturday at Tallahassee. In a shooter's mentality, Luke, the best way back is the old see the ball go in the basket, or is there something else to it?
I was always trying to get the ball to go in the basket. The easiest way to do that is getting to the free throw line. I think Jordan Wara's just skill set probably allows him to create a few more opportunities than Buddy Boeheim. But I think both those guys are prolific shooters at a level where they're not going to be down for very long. I think both of them could have big games today. You're hoping that the Louisville team can rise to the occasion, because if they play the way they did the last 2 weeks, it won't matter if Buddy Boeheim goes 0-for-7 again. Syracuse is going to win this game. They need to play better as a team. I think when you saw Louisville make that 10-game run and people really believed in them, it wasn't just Jordan Wara that made you say these guys can really score the basketball and they're pretty good. You had a 5-3 game from Darius Perry. You had a 7-3 game from Ryan McMahon. You had a lot of contribution from Sam Williamson off the bench. And Malik Williams and Stephen Enoch, you know, they're not going to wow you with some of their stats because they really play almost 50-50. They're right around 20 minutes each game. And I think combined for your five spot, they are playing really, really well. So it's not just Jordan, but averaging 19 points up until this last week and then dropping to 3.5. You can imagine why Louisville struggled.
Look, obviously a really important game for Syracuse tonight, too, as we discussed. It's also an important game for NC State tonight as they host Duke. Blue Devils now in the number one spot in the league standings. But for NC State, it doesn't get any bigger this week with what their schedule is, with Duke and Florida State coming to Raleigh. The Wolfpack coming off a tough loss to BC. They really need to figure out a way to win one of these at least this week against ranked teams.
I said 100%. Syracuse and NC State are those teams, I'll take your word, in the blob that you feel good about 1 week and then they just can't quite get it done against teams they really should. If NC State had won that game, they have three huge games left down the stretch here, and I think they need probably two of them in order to be back in the conversation. This would be a huge help for them. I know they're going to be fired up in Raleigh. Kevin Keats is known every year for kind of having a big upset game. You hope Markell Johnson can be the man for them. He's got to be a facilitator. I love C.J. Bryce, but I think Markell Johnson has to play a little bit better for NC State to have a chance, especially when you think about who he's matched up against with Jordan Goldwire and Mr. Jones down there in Duke.
Yeah, I think we touched yesterday. I think Goldwire gives Duke the 5 to 8 minute energy burst off the bench, especially on defense. Yep. And, I mean, you've seen this Duke team play itself out before. In the past, it's been somebody else. But Goldwire now has almost worked his way into the backcourt X factor for them, Luke.
I think so. I think so. Early on, I thought it was Cassius Stanley. He's definitely elevated his play, but Goldwire and Jones as a defensive tandem may be one of the best in the entire country. The way those guys can get after you and disrupt the way you want to start your offense. If you notice, when those guys are really engaged on the defensive end, other teams will start their offense so much further out away from the three-point line, and it just makes it tougher. It takes time off the shot clock, makes you take tougher jumpers. Those guys are really, really good and kind of set the tone for everybody else.
Luke, speaking of backcourt, so we had Chris Likes on the show yesterday. Miami's getting healthy. Yeah. And it's a team that's kind of buried in the standings. They've been beat up all year. They get the Hokies tonight on the road. Is Miami one of those teams that can kind of be maybe a pleasant surprise here the next 3 weeks moving forward?
You mean they got more than 5.5 guys?
Yeah,
wow.
Exactly.
Yeah, I definitely think that backcourt is one of the best in the league when they're playing really well with DJ, Cameron McGusty, and obviously Chris Likes can really score it in bunches. They really needed help in the front court. That's where all their question marks were this whole year. They're a team that really has to score a lot of points between those three out on the perimeter for them to have a chance, but they've been doing it. You know, they've gotten better and better throughout the year. They have a game plan now that seems to fit. It's not quite as up-tempo and get after it as it used to be back in the George Mason days when I played for Coach Larrañaga. But you see him adjusting to his roster, and I think as they get a few more guys, that team's going to be tough, especially tournament time. You know, that's not the team I want to play in the ACC tournament, that's for sure.
That's a good point, especially with the explosiveness of Likes. And then Rodney Miller's been very serviceable, as we've talked about, coming off the red shirt a year ago. Okay, you get your choice here on Packer and Durham. We're going to give you two topics, and you can choose which way you want to go, okay? It's up to you here for the final few minutes. Number one, we'll talk about your draft, or or you can tell us about your field trip with the All-ACC group, because we know we got three shows of All-ACC today, Pac.
That's it.
I mean, it's almost like a Packer in Durham, 2:30, 6:10 tonight on ACC Network. So you choose, Luke. You want to tell us about the field trip, or do you want to hear the respect we give you for the fact you were able to choose somebody that played in this league before 1990?
Well, I figured you guys would roast me on the draft for not choosing MJ first, so I appreciate that I didn't get absolutely crucified there. The only thing I'll say with the draft, I realize I should have taken Len Bias instead of Elton Brand. Then I think Dallin and I would have had a good competition. I'm not sure who he would have slotted in there, but I did make my one mistake there. I would have taken Len Bias instead of Elton Brand, or before Elton Brand.
Well, hey, don't wait a minute. Wait. You're my unverified brother, but don't think that's the only mistake you made.
Billy Cunningham, Psycho T, was probably the second conversation.
There you go.
I will just say this. We respected the fact that you went old school.
I give you a lot of credit for picking somebody to play before 1990.
But here's the problem. Billy Cunningham never played in an ACC championship game.
Right.
Never won one.
Hall of Famer. Didn't he average? He had 25 rebound games all the time.
Nobody's knocking him as a player. I'm just saying to you, there was no Tyler Hansbrough amongst the 15 selections.
No Leitner.
There was a Billy Cunningham selection. One guy never played in an ACC championship game. One guy over here led the league, led the world in scoring, for crying out loud. I mean, I'm just saying. Just saying.
There is so much of that you could do in that draft. You know, Billy Cunningham's a Hall of Famer. Tyler Hansbrough was a phenomenal, one of the best ACC players of all time. But I do like my team a lot. I think they're very athletic. They can score it in bunches. If I were a betting man, I might have to put my money on Dallin. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Tell Boozer
I
when
like
we get
my
to,
draft, though.
Tell Boozer when we get to Greensboro, we're going to ask him how Brian Davis didn't make his team.
Yeah, I can't believe he didn't go 5 Dukies. I'm shocked.
You speak the truth on that one, my man.
I'm shocked.
All right, so you got the field trip, right? You guys, 2:30 today, 6 o'clock, and then 10 o'clock tonight. It's like a full day's work for you, Hancock.
It's going to be a long day. That's why I got up early, started it off with you guys. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know we're going to touch a little Dan McDonald baseball and then get ready for this big game. And I'm telling you, Syracuse is going to be ready to play, and they're going to be so – They're going to be fiending for a big time win. They want a game like this really bad.
All right, Luke.
Always
thanks.
A pleasure.
Appreciate it as always, man.
Thanks, guys. See you soon.
All right, Luke Hancock. He'll be part of the All ACC group today, 2:30, 6 o'clock, and 10 o'clock. It's the gift that keeps on giving today.
Hey, you know what? It beats working.
There you go.
Packer and Durham.
There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Packer and Durham from the basement. Appreciate my unverified brother, Luke Hancock.
I can't wait till he gets verified.
Parting ways.
Parting ways. Anytime we can run the Homecoming King video, I get
that was
fired up about
impressive.
It. Impressive. Yeah. It's good.
You know, we needed the coveted invite to break that down.
Would have been good.
I mean, she's the best of all time, right? I mean, she's former Miss Kentucky. She'd know about all that stuff.
Yeah. No doubt, right?
Right. Coveted invite.
How'd you walk?
Yeah.
Nice sunglasses.
There's
by
no
the way,
one
night.
That would be better at breaking that down than the coveted invite.
I thought for a moment that might have been from Roanoke, Virginia high school days, but then I realized it was Louisville.
Yeah. Charlie Scott, one of the all-time amazing stories in this league.
Yeah.
Forget players. Stories.
Yeah. I just think, when you start thinking about pioneers, especially ones that broke the color line throughout the history of the ACC, and there have been a lot now. I mean, I understand every school's got the person that did that. And those people are pioneers. But Charlie Scott came to the University of North Carolina from Laurinburg Institute out of the streets of New York. And when he started playing varsity basketball at Carolina, Mark, it was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really big deal. And Corey Alexander had a chance a couple of years ago to visit with Charlie and look and talk about what that experience was like. And here it is.
I visited North Carolina on a weekend they used to call Jubilee Weekend. And it was the weekend right before finals. And the weekend that I visited North Carolina, it's so funny because before I came up, Coach Smith, I had visited Duke, and Coach Smith asked me, "Well, what did Duke do with you?" I said, "Well, Duke took me to a club called the Stallion Club in Durham, North Carolina, and I got to see Otis Redding." And I said, "That was great." So he said, "Okay, well, I want you to visit up here next week." So I came up to North Carolina next week, and it was Jubilee Weekend, and that weekend they had Smokey Robinson and the Miracles and the Temptations. And I said, any school that got Smokey Robinson and the Miracles and the Temptations, you know, they having fun. This is where I want to go to school. I had no relationship with my teammates. My college experience was not a college experience because the things that made North Carolina, my teammates could not enjoy with me. I could not go to fraternities with them. I couldn't go to parties with them. We couldn't hang out together. We had nothing in common. I played basketball at North Carolina. My closest friends was Larry Brown and Coach Lodge. My closest friend at North Carolina was the assistant coaches for the players to do anything I wanted to do would have taken them out of their comfort zone. And for me, they could not take me to any place that they were going. It was tough. It was tough because what I had to always do is, you know, basically my first year, I made basketball my life. I would come to the gym by myself. I would work out by myself. I would play by myself. I worked on my skills because there was nothing really I could do on campus with anybody else, you know, because it would ostracize them. And as we're walking off the court and we're going to the locker room, and because this is our, you know, this was our win back. You know, the only loss we had at that time was to South Carolina in ACC. So we just won them back. And I'm feeling good about the fact that we just won, you know, we made retribution for our only loss in ACC. And we walk into the locker room and all of us, the players, we all stand together. And a guy ran up behind me and said, "Charlie Scott, you big black baboon." And all that feeling of enjoyment just went down the drain at that point in time. But the thing that made me feel even better, it was the first time and the only time I ever saw Coach Smith get upset where he had to be held back from going after that fan by Coach Guthridge. Because I guess it was the last straw for him, too, that a fan would and that the police let that fan get that close. Because, I mean, this guy was, like, close as you and I was, and he looked me in the face and said, "You big black baboon." You know, and he said it with such viciousness and villainy that, you know, I felt it. I felt what he was saying to me.
Amazing stuff with Charles Scott. On this show, behind us, we have books up on the shelves here, both sides. One of the books we have on the shelf is one that the great Barry Jacobs did, 2008, called Across the Line. And Barry spent several years trying to contact the first black basketball players at each institution in the ACC and the SEC. And he did a marvelous chapter in here on Charles Scott. He did one on Al Hartley at NC State, Norwood Todman at Wake Forest, Clemson, Maryland, all the schools of the ACC when it had memberships basically of nine or so. And then he also did the Southeastern Conference. And I'm thinking about that because of the retirement they had on Saturday in Tuscaloosa. Wendell Hudson's jersey was put in the rafters at Coleman Coliseum. We don't recommend history books. Occasionally we'll refer to them, but if you're inclined, this is a great piece of work.
You'll have a hard time putting it down when you get started.
And Barry is a phenomenal writer. We've been fortunate to have him cover the Atlantic Coast Conference for, good heavens, longer than Barry would probably care to admit, right?
He's great.
But you can get this book, I'm still sure, available online, Amazon, what have you. But I would tell you it's really, really important, and it's a well-documented book of the struggles that each of these individuals went through.
But just to see Charlie Scott give you those stories, it's hard to believe that was 50 years ago.
Yep.
It's really amazing that was just 50 years ago.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.